You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Coming up, the ladies discuss the women of Doctor Who, the Russell T. Davies years.
The way Russell T. Davies wrote the whole thing was slow and organic. Nothing was rushed, even though there was a lot of running.
All these women aren't special because they have some intricate place in the universe. They're special because they're a unique human being.
She was actually acting pretty much as a doctor, because she would just say, this just has to be done. I'm not going to wait for approval. I'm just going to go do it.
She grows. She gets this confidence in herself. She's a totally different woman, but she's more herself than I think she's ever been.
All the time before that, she was just there because, at least that was my feeling, because the doctor didn't want to be lonely, didn't want to be alone. And the way they were introduced, it left something of a bad taste in my mouth.
That's next on Sci-Fi for Chicks, Women of Genre.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is back, and so is our discussion of each and every episode as we gather down in the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters. Join us for recaps, analysis, and discussion, with a few digressions along the way, and you do have security clearance to listen. Level 117 every week, part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio, only on scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Do you ever wonder what a woman really thinks about?
Doctor Who.
Harry Potter.
Lust.
Orphan Black.
Grimm.
Space. The
Fear
Final
the
Frontier.
Walking
Outlander.
Dead.
Star Wars.
Heroes and Heroes Reborn.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agent Carter.
Mr. Robot.
Lord of the Rings.
I, Zombie.
Stargate.
Alien.
The Secrets of the Immortal Nicholas
The Fox. Marvel Movies.
Penny Dreadful.
Walking Dead.
X-Men. Cosmos.
Firefly.
Game of Thrones.
Harry Dresden.
The Return.
The Spiderwick Chronicles.
Teen Wolf.
Sherlock.
Battlestar Galactica.
Sleepy
Ghostbusters.
Star Trek.
Torchwood.
Guardians
of
the Galaxy.
All you have to do is listen. This is Sci-Fi for Chicks.
Hi, and welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks as we continue our Women in Genre series, where we look at female characters in some of our favorite TV shows, movies, books, and more. Today we're going to be talking about the women of Doctor Who, the Davis era, because, well, there's 50 years of Doctor Who or more, and we just can't pack all of those fabulous and some not so fabulous women into one podcast. My name is Heather French, and I am joined by two of the lovely ladies of scififorme.com. First up is my podcasting partner in crime, Alex Callahan. Hey, Alex.
What's up?
We can tell it's been a while since we've podcasted together. She's actually excited. And we have from the home office, Cammie Settle, who is also on our Level 117 podcast and maybe the upcoming Grimm. I'm hoping. Please. Hey, Cammie.
I think we'll be there too. Thanks.
It is really good to be back with you guys. I have had technical problems extraordinaire, and I have missed podcasting with everyone. And so we thought we'd come back with a little bit easier one that isn't going to be too rant heavy. And we're going to be talking about the women of the Russell T. Davies era. Now, ladies, for me, Doctor Who is really kind of into three different time periods. First off, we have Classic Who, which for me is Doctors 1 through 7, Hartnell through McCoy. Those all seem very BBC-like, have a similar feel, with the changes mainly being when they were filmed, the 60s versus 70s versus 80s. Then we go into what I consider a transitional Who, which is the Eighth Doctor, because that's the collaboration between BBC and Fox. It was a TV movie. They're hoping to make something new of this. It's trying to be new and fresh and American, but it's also still trying to be true to BBC. And I think it failed miserably on both, even though I love Paul McGann as the Doctor. And then we have New Who, which started with Russell T. Davies. And that was what, 2004? It was 5 here in the States is when it started airing. But I think
it was a long time ago, and it's all blurry.
In a galaxy far, far away.
Far away. Jinx, you owe me a Coke. What I think Davis did that was really pretty brilliant, and I know this is the women of genre, but I want to talk about Davis real quick for a second, is one of the many reasons I think the Eighth Doctor movie failed was we start right away with Sylvester McCoy. We have this doctor, he's running, he's doing stuff. And we get, okay, this is our doctor. So we know him. We're following him. This is the guy we're supposed to be with. He then gets hurt. He then dies and regenerates. So we're already dealing with regeneration right off the bat. And suddenly he's this new guy. Wait, we have a new doctor. Wait, I just got used to the old one. And along the way, we meet Grace, his companion. And I think that was the wrong way to go. I think Davis looked at that and maybe also looked at how Hartnell started. We didn't start with the doctor in the very first episode of Doctor Who. We started with Susan and Barbara and Ian, the people that are here on Earth that we can identify with. And that's what Davis did, is we don't start with the doctor. We started with Rose Tyler, a simple girl who's living a regular life and going to a shop and with her mom and her boyfriend. And I think this was brilliant because instantly we start slow, we start small and identifiable. And instead of us trying to jump on the doctor train, he grabs our hand and pulls us along with him. And I was hooked from the moment I saw it.
But it was strategy, basically, because, for example, when Doctor Who aired here in Poland, which it did mm-hmm. right after it premiered on BBC in the UK. So we had a delay of a week, two maybe max. But mm-hmm. basically people who watched knew who in Poland, we had no idea there was a Doctor Who before. Like all the classic Who that I've ever had experienced was after I started watching Christopher Eccleston and Nine, because I figured, hey, this is interesting. I hear there's more. Give me more. But it wouldn't happen if I had to basically, this is the same problem I have with comics. There are years and years and years of stuff I should know, which means I will never get into it because I will feel like I'm playing catch up. But when we got introduced to Rose, we were Rose, basically. I was Rose, and this was new to me and everything, and it was exciting, and I didn't feel like there was any responsibility on my part to catch up on 50 years of Doctor Who.
It's a really good point. Yeah, you know, we started it and discovered it with Rose.
Yeah, which is probably why, even though Rose isn't my favorite companion, she will always hold this special place in my heart because she introduced me to this wonder that was Doctor Who, 9 and 10 especially. And I was like, oh, please don't go.
She grew on you.
Yeah, she did. Well, I always liked her because she was almost like me, you know, completely normal. Mm-hmm. There was nothing special about Rose, aside from the fact that she was Rose.
Well, and that's something that I definitely agree with. And we're going to touch more on Moffat when we do the Moffat episode, because it's too early in the morning to rant that much. But all the companions really under Davis could be me. I mean, I worked in the shop. I've done the temp work. I've not a medical student, but I've been a student. All these women aren't special because they have some intricate place in the universe. They're special because they're a unique human being that has different aspects to bring to it and to help make the doctor more in touch with his humanity. There's that line at the end, jumping all the way to the end, Journey's End, when the doctor is trying to convince Rose that she should stay in the alternate parallel universe with the human doctor. You know, it's like, does this sound familiar? That's me before I met you. You're the one that made me more human, made me be able to connect with this. And it wasn't because she was this linchpin in the entire fabric of time and space. It was because she was just Rose Tyler. And so I think that's what I really like about Rose and the Davis companions is that this could be me. I identify more with those companions than I do with any of the others in the Moffat era, because everybody else in the Moffat era are special to the universe. Mm. And these companions all just happen to be in the wrong place at the right time.
Basically, let's face it, no matter how much we like to think we're special, we are not special snowflakes.
Yeah, they were snowflakes, exactly right.
Yeah, And so if you want to identify with somebody, you need someone who's equally not special in the grand scheme of things, but mm-hmm. special and unique because of the personality and the approach and how relatable they are. Rose and Martha and Donna, they were brilliant because they weren't special. They were everyday people, you know, every woman, mm-hmm. technically, though I know the phrase is every man. But yeah.
If I had been in that shop late at night and the guy is like going, hey, I've got to give the winnings to, I forget the guy's name. That was, well, I'll go, I could have taken it down to the guy in the cellar and accidentally been around all those autons and had my hand there for Christopher Eccleston to grab and to run. And I would have been like, I'm not a very good runner. Can we just walk really fast?
Power walk.
Something I think is really interesting too is that this episode, Rose, which again, we're coming back to Doctor Who. The first episode is not called Doctor Who. It's called Rose. And it was an immediate success. And I believe it still holds the record as the most watched Doctor premiere, with that's from the beginning. I think it's Destiny of the Daleks, but because there was an ITV strike, it says here online, they kind of discount those numbers because they don't know. But Rose got more than The Christmas Invasion, The 11th Hour, and Deep Breath. So it was the most watched Doctor premiere. And I think that tells something about the excitement and about these two characters, Rose and Eccleston. He is my doctor. Now, what do you guys think? One of the big criticisms about Rose, though, however, is that she's a love interest, which I know many Classic Who fans kind of really didn't like, because from what I've seen of Classic Who, we really didn't have any of that kind of romance. You might have had that look up to kind of thing, you know, the wide-eyed, but more like mentor. And this, again, I think came out because of McGann's Doctor, the Eighth Doctor, because he was a very romantic and you know, poet type thing with the hair and the dress, and he just exuded this romance. And then suddenly now we have a companion who, much younger, but there was definitely, I think, romantic tension right from the get-go in this.
I want to say something deep and meaningful here, but when you have a doctor who looks like Christopher Eccleston in a leather jacket, it's hard not to, you know, fall for him a little bit. And then he's replaced by David Tennant.
It's Barcelona. Just,
I really feel like Rose didn't stand a chance. Seriously, you get those two extremely handsome men. What did they expect? Rose wasn't established as a lesbian. She had no choice but to fall for the guy.
Yeah, well, it's really Mickey that I feel sorry for. He didn't stand a chance. And see, that part of the story kind of was the downfall for me.
Yeah. But then Mickey met Jake, and I'm okay with that.
Then Mickey married Martha.
Yes, I know, but I'm shipping him with Jake. Because I liked Jake, and I liked Mickey. So, you know, Mickey, Jake. I'm okay with that.
For those of you who don't know, Alex does her own headcanon, and it's just best not to argue with her when she does. It's just safer that
way. Sounds like a timey-wimey thing to me.
Things happen the way I think they happen, because it's better for me to think they happen that way. Right. And Heather indulges me because she stands no chance and we talk too often for her to be safe.
Yeah, that's very much so. We might be a quarter of a world away, but it's just safer that way.
Yeah. Well, as we talk through these companions, I want you ladies to think about something, because I want to come back to this at the end of our podcast. And that is, what did each of these companions bring to the Doctor?
Ooh, okay. Difficult question.
So be thinking about that as we talk through these. Take your notes. There will be a test.
That's not fair.
I've only had one cup of coffee for the test.
We may have to take a break.
We might have to take a break.
Refill that mug.
Okay, so I want to let's pull it back to Rose and the romance of Rose.
Okay.
I watched, I had known about Doctor Who, but I didn't watch Doctor Who, because when it was airing in the States, which was the Tom Baker era. That's the same time Star Wars was on. I'm a small child. Star Wars had so much better special effects, and I look at Doctor Who with the cardboard and the styrofoam, and I'm like, pfft.
Right.
So
you
I didn't
really use your imagination there.
Exactly. So that's all I knew really of Doctor Who. And when I was watching this was late night on the LA PBS station, KCET, and I didn't really know that this was new. I thought this was maybe a few years old and they just had bought it and, you know, were airing it.
Okay.
And by the time we got to the episode, Unquiet Dead, where they travel back and meet Charles Dickens, there was this, I saw this building between the two of them that really did seem natural because she started looking up to him and him intrigued by her. You know, we find out that he's a new doctor, which we can even tell, even though we didn't really know about regeneration until the end of Eccleston's run, you can tell he's looking in mirrors and like, exploring his face and, you know, the ears and the nose and the way he's talking about himself. So they're both really new to each other. And this is, Rose is new in this aspect because she's been a shop girl and been dating Mickey and, you know, with Jackie. And in Unquiet Dead is where I think he first really looks at her as more than just this human companion, because he dismisses her in some of the previous episodes as a human. He does again later, but this is the first one I think he actually looks at her as a female. And when they're trapped in that cellar with those Dickensian walkers, for all intents and purposes, coming after them, and they both look at each other, they hold hands, and are like, you know, I'm really glad that we had this time together. I wouldn't have changed anything. That was the moment that I went, okay, you guys are connecting in a different way besides I'm the doctor and you're the companion kind of thing, that they were actually connecting. And everything really seemed very consistent for me after that. And I didn't mind the relationship as long as they didn't consummate the relationship too soon. Cause that's the death knell, I think, for any kind of sexual romantic tension.
It needs to be earned.
Yeah. I like it did seem to start slow. We had the bumps with like Jack Harkness and what was his name? Adam and a couple other guys that kind of turned Rose's head. So I thought she was being very 19-year-old human.
Yeah, it's very really human thing. Well, yeah. Because the doctor really wasn't trying to get involved. He was trying not to get involved. Mm-hmm. And possibly for his very good historical reasons, where he's just lost everybody. It's a protectionary mechanism for him. You know, and I will venture to say that Rose brought love back into his life, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and knowing what we know now about the Time War and such and what happened and how we had the war doctor that went into Eccleston who went to straight basically to Rose after that, I can see where that makes it. It's one of the Moffat things I do like because it made what Eccleston's doctor did and his connections so much more understandable, why he was vacillating between utter rage to goofiness to very tender. All right. Of his things that made even more sense based on, like you said, he's just lost everybody. Because I wasn't sure. It's like, when did he lose all the other Time Lords?
Yeah.
When did all this happen? And it's that much more fresh. And she's able to, just like the Tenet doctor says later, you know, that she brings this back in him. She's the one that connects him back to that.
Right. So now the War Doctor doesn't have a number, does he?
No.
He's like Dr. 9 3/4.
Although he'd be 8 3/4, wouldn't he? Because he's before 9.
Yeah.
Oh, true. Okay.
Fair enough. Yeah. So maybe that's why it is platform 9 3/4. It's, you know. Do you have a favorite moment or a least favorite moment when it comes to Rose? Let's start with the Ninth Doctor time. Because we do have two separate, this is unprecedented in our current series until Clara. She's the only companion until Clara comes that actually sees two different doctors, which also makes her kind of unique.
No. Rose and Clara, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
Until Clara, all the other companions only knew one doctor. And Rose actually, she witnesses the change just like Clara does. And so she has these two different feelings and has to kind of, you know, jump the two, which I think is an interesting concept because you can tell they were getting really close. I mean, hey, she just kissed Eccleston. I was going to say something, but I'd have to edit it out anyway. So might as well just not even say it. But, you know, they've just made that jump. And then suddenly here you have this new guy, Barcelona. is the same guy, but he's not. Which I love how they did in Christmas, the Christmas Invasion, how she's acting with him. It's like, it's him, but it's not him, but it is, but it's not, but I don't know. And I,
yeah, and he's
and still not Ginger.
That's right.
Which you is know, why I always thought Rupert Grint might be had a chance at one time to be the next Doctor. Exactly. You know, then he could finally be Ginger.
You know, I don't remember so much of the Christopher Eccleston era. It's been so long since I've seen those episodes.
Poor you. Poor you.
I actually do have a favorite moment of Rose in the Eccleston era, but it's at the very end when Rose gazes into the TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was this huge, huge thing, and even and it showed me that, well, me and a lot of other people as well, I think, that ordinary people are capable of extraordinary things. Because gazing into the TARDIS was this huge thing that she wasn't even supposed to do. Because it was dangerous and very, very, very dangerous and everything. But she did, because she needed to do it to, you know, fix everything and all the bad wolf things, which just blew my mind when I was watching it. But yeah, I think that was my favorite Rose moment from the Nine era, because up until that moment, we were just getting to know Rose. Because let's face it, British seasons are extremely short. You know, you can't get to know the character in 13 episodes, and or 10, I don't remember. But it was short. And
13.
Yeah. So yeah. Up until then, we were getting to know Rose. And the way Russell T. Davies wrote the whole thing was slow and organic. And, you know, nothing was rushed, even though there was a lot of running. But nothing.
Yes, there was a lot of action.
And nothing character development was rushed. And up until that moment, I didn't feel like I knew Rose. I mean, I knew of Rose, and I could predict, maybe, possibly, how she would act. But until she gazed into the TARDIS, because there was a greater good and a greater thing that she had to do,
right.
I didn't feel like I knew Rose. And in that moment, I fell in love with her. And I couldn't imagine the Doctor without Rose.
You're right, because that is the moment that she does make that ultimate decision. Because she'd made the decision before when she was with Mickey. It's like, well, do I stay or do I go? The Doctor comes back and she has to decide. But that still seemed like, yeah, I still want to go on this adventure. That moment in Parting of the Ways was the moment that she completely changed her life and said, my life is with him.
Yeah.
Right.
And just period. That's just it.
Yeah. And the ironic thing is that when she decided to save him by looking into the TARDIS, she actually caused his regeneration in a roundabout way, because then he had to transfer that energy back into the TARDIS. And
one of only three companions that have caused the Doctor to regenerate.
But hey, Rose was awesome. And that's why that was my favorite Nine-era moment of Rose, basically.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Thank you.
So they kiss, and he changes, well, I'll still be here, not with this daft old face, which I'm like, but I like this daft old face. And then he turns into Barty Crouch Jr., because that's what I thought, because that's all I'd seen of David Tennant up to that point. Yeah, that, I just kept seeing Barcelona with the tongue. So, you know, that's the only image I had of him. I was very unsure about Tennant. I like how she also portrayed herself in Christmas Invasion and that connection, because that's what made me be like, okay, I'm ready to accept this Doctor now, because Rose has had that same trepidation and she's growing to accept him too. And we get the end of Christmas Invasion when, you know, you can tell she's like, he's back. Yes, everything's back. It is him, even though it doesn't look like him. And I think that was probably a very important moment.
Mm.
In who, because she, and with her, because she's the one that helps us accept.
Yeah.
The new Doctor.
She helped me accept this new guy, which, by the way, I didn't remember him from Harry Potter. I just didn't make the connection. And I just saw a new guy. Yeah, I just saw a new guy and
my reaction was, who is this person? Why doesn't he look like Christopher Eccleston? Did something happen? Did Christopher didn't want Doctor Who anymore? Come on!
So was that about the same time as the Goblet of Fire came out?
It was Goblet of Fire came out just before. About a year and a half before.
Okay.
That episode of Doctor Who. So yeah, and Tennant wasn't known over here at all. I think he was really much more of a stage actor at that point. Yeah. So he was doing those big breaks into things. But I think over here, unless you watch some underground things, I think Barty Crouch Jr. really would be the main way that most of us Americans knew. And when on our PBS station, they basically only had the rights to the 9th series one. And so they'd get to the end and they'd start over again. Eccleston and Rose just got ingrained in me. And so I'm like, who is this interloper? Rose, kick him out of the TARDIS and you go off on your own. And then he, you know, threw the Satsuma. And I was like, okay, I'll give you a chance.
Tennant grew on me, especially after the kittens. Come on, kittens. How can you resist? I feel like that was a great tactic on Davis's part. Just give people Tennant. And then shower him with kittens.
Well, and something I really liked is if you get into that series two, we have just the 4th episode in is school reunion, where now Rose, who's feeling pretty confident in her place in the Doctor's life, is suddenly introduced to Sarah Jane Smith, who is probably the ultimate companion. Pre-Rose, and is still, I would say, number one and Rose two in kind of fandom. That was a great moment, I think, with this mix of them kind of, no, he's my doctor, no, my doctor, no, my doctor. Wait a second, does he do this? Yeah, he does. Ha, 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 ha. I loved the two of them together.
That's good. It was a nice little reminiscing as well. The nostalgia that was involved there.
It did help Rose put things in perspective, I felt. Because up until then, she knew there were other companions, right? Intellectually, she had to know, but she didn't
know. He's 903 years old, yeah.
Yeah, she didn't know. And there she was, faced with actual human being who traveled with who traveled with the Doctor. And it's like, not even if you don't look at it from a romantic kind of point of view, it's like when your best friend meets somebody else and they are really good friends, and it's not like, you know, you're threatened by this person, but you are. How dare they?
Well, it echoes in season 4 with Donna Noble when Donna meets River. And River's like, oh, you're Donna. And, well, what do you mean you don't know me? Where am I? You know, Donna's like, wait a second. Yeah. You know, Donna's a little more okay with him knowing other people out there. But she's like, wait, you're in his future and you don't know me. You just know of me from what he said. Where am I? It kind of echoes that you have this meeting of this alternate person. And I think it was a great nod to the classic Who. I loved bringing back. I loved Sarah Jane and seeing that. It makes me want to go back and watch her episodes more. And I would really love to see the Sarah Jane
Adventures
show as well. But yeah,
brilliant.
They didn't air it here.
You definitely should check it out. I don't know on Amazon if they have it, but Sarah Jane Adventures was so brilliant. So heartwarming.
You could tell that Davis really liked her too.
Yeah.
Because I think he treated her really well in that.
It's like a Sarah Jane love fest all the way, which is very deserving because she's an incredible character.
How did Rose grow from that first episode, Rose, until we get to her in Army of Ghosts and Doomsday, where she says goodbye? I mean, what kind of change do you see in her?
I've never put it in words, which is why I'm not sure how to do it this time. So, you know, bear with me as I try to verbalize things. And
you think about that, you know, if I had to summarize it, I would say that Rose grew up.
Pretty much.
You know, in just very simple terms, she grew up as a human. She always had that innate ability to ask the right questions. You know, she's intuitive. And I think that she learned how to apply that better as the episodes progressed, and how she, you know, and she grew as a person. The love that she manifested for the Doctor and for Mickey changed. You know, she basically figured it out, and, you know, and then the sacrifice that she made for the Doctor more than once. I just think that she kind of showed herself as a maturing individual.
I think somewhere along the way she realized there are things bigger than she is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
And even though, you know, everybody knows that there are bigger things and the bigger picture, but we are always the most important people in our little universe, in our little world. And that's where she started. But somewhere along the way, after all the adventures and all the people and all the tragedies that she faced, she realized that there are more important things, bigger things, things that are worth fighting for and sacrificing yourself and what you want for those bigger things.
Right.
And once she realized that, she couldn't be selfish anymore. And that's how she ended up in the universe where she was alone.
You know, we almost see that with almost every companion, if you apply it in a general term. Because every one of them makes some kind of sacrifice, and they grow as individuals. You know, how can you not grow if you're traveling with the Doctor, right?
Yeah.
But with Rose, I think it was really a lot more exaggerated because she was so young when she started with him.
For me, I think she gained this confidence, this self-confidence that she didn't have, that she didn't know she didn't have in the beginning. She's leading a nice little life with her mom and her shop and Mickey. And I mean, her and Mickey seemed very happy in the beginning. And she got the confidence along the way to realize her and Mickey just aren't there. She loves Mickey, but not in that way. And he deserves more. You know, she loves her mom, but she has to go and be her own thing. I mean, the way we see her, even going from like Father's Day, when they go back in time and she meets her dad, and how she's tentative about everything and she's apologizing for everything, to how she is when we get to things like The Impossible Planet and Satan's Pit, that two-part, which I love those episodes, where she's basically saying, no, you sacrifice me for this.
Right.
You don't let him get out. You sacrifice me.
She began making decisions and acting before just waiting for the Doctor to come save everybody. You know, she was actually acting pretty much as a doctor in some respects, because she would just say, this just has to be done. I'm not going to wait for approval. I'm just going to go do it. You know?
Yeah.
Right. I like how you're saying that. Cause yeah, she did take that initiative to go do things like we have in The Empty Child, Doctor Dances, when her and the doctor are split apart. She doesn't go, where is he? Where is he? Where is he? I can't do anything.
Right.
She is doing things on her own, and then they meet up together again. And yeah, there, I think that is a really important part of her character. And again, something that she had in her, that she didn't know. He awakened that in her.
Yes.
That you can do this. And I think that's really important. Okay, before we move on from Rose, I do want to say one other thing. So I talked about in the Eccleston years, did you have a favorite moment or a least favorite moment? I'm going to go ahead and go into my least favorite moment in series 2, which is the Tennant one. And that's actually an entire episode that I think I would really like if it wasn't Rose, because Moffat, I'm blaming Moffat, and this is one of the favorite episodes of a lot of people, wrote this episode, and it should not be a Rose episode. This should have been a Martha episode, and that's The Girl in the Fireplace, because the Doctor didn't care a lick about what happened to Rose, and that's not the Doctor that had been with Rose in any of the other episodes with Rose. The Doctor was ready to give up, let Rose stay on that ship in the future with Mickey. I'm going back for Renette. I'm doing all this for Renette, to save Renette. And it was so out of place. It would have been a perfect Martha episode. I'm sorry, Martha, I do like you.
You're right.
But it is the one that bothers me the most, even over things like Fear Her and all those other, you know. No, I least favorite moment, because it was not doing justice to Rose.
It's actually my least favorite episode overall.
It is for me too, but I started thinking about it going, if it was a Martha episode, I might have liked it more.
Huh. I haven't thought about it. You're right. Especially if they put it at the first half of the first season Martha was in. I think, that would work really well. Because they were still getting to know each other, Doctor and Martha, then,
It's not an episode where you put where in a season where the companion and the doctor have been with each other, traveling together for a long period of time. Yeah. You're right. The next time I see this episode, I will be picturing Martha.
Oh, I think that's a spot on assessment. Spot on.
And we do have Rose also continuing into Donna's years too, with appearances in several of those episodes. And again, that continues on with what I think you said, Cammie, how she was doing things without the doctor. Mm-hmm. She's in this alternate universe. She's been fighting for this, but she's now at a point where we need the doctor, not I need the doctor. We need the doctor, until of course it came to, but we're together again. Love, love, love. Anything else on Rose? Who are we moving on to next?
Just want to talk about her mother for a moment. Jackie.
Oh,
Tyler,
Jackie.
Who was the force to be reckoned with.
Yes.
And, you know, at first I didn't Wednesday. Like Jackie. I mean, I liked her, but I just didn't know about her.
Mm.
But the more she interacted with the doctor, the more character we saw from her. And so it wasn't just this nagging mother telling her daughter to be home on time or where have you been and all this stuff. She became the mother bear protecting her young.
Yeah.
And I think that he was genuinely afraid of Jackie Tyler.
Oh, who wouldn't be?
As he should be.
And that's when I really started liking Jackie so much more.
Let's face it, Doctor was a smart man. He knew where the danger was.
Oh, yeah.
He respected the danger.
Yeah. Which was Jackie. Give me a Dalek any day.
Well, and a comparison between Jackie Tyler and Francine, I'll say Jones, as I can't remember. She remarries. I don't remember what her name is. But Martha's mom Jackie earned that respect. Martha's mom was just because it was Martha's mom. She's the one that actually caused problems. Whereas right. Jackie, yeah, starts out as stereotypical, you know, mom of the girl that I'm with kind of thing. But yeah, he really did learn to respect her, and she just didn't even care what he thought at all.
That's right. She's just going to say it like it is. Well, and the difference between those two mothers, I think, is that Jackie allowed Rose to make her own decisions, but wanted her to make the best decisions possible. And with Francine, I think Francine was a little more, she was kind of an architect of her children's future.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Okay. That's how I viewed her.
But I actually liked both of them because they both were personifications of those types of mothers that we all know and some of us have. That mother that might be sometimes problematic but will allow you to make your own mistakes, basically, and grow on your own, and that other kind of parent who knows what's best for you and you should just do what she says.
It's going to make like sure you, Alex. You do that.
Basically. So even though they were so different and there is no doubt that I liked Jackie more, I kind of respect them both because they were good mothers. They love
all three of the mothers, even getting into Sylvia Noble. I do have a respect for all of them, but Jackie, I respect that she kind of like Rose, she found her own way, her own voice, because she had this, you know, these questions too. I mean, after you see Father's Day and her talking about, you know, her husband that she loved and she's putting him up on a pillar, but then we see he's not really, and how she's unsure of herself. And she grows too. I mean, she gets this confidence in herself too by the end of her run that she's a totally different woman, but she's more herself than I think she's ever been.
Yeah.
Mm. Definitely.
And I like Jackie and her care. She has that mother henness, but again, like you were saying, I understand you have to do this, but you have to always come back to me. You got to come back. You can't just disappear for, you know, like a year and we thought you were dead kind of thing. So kudos to Jackie Tyler. Like I said, I like all three of them, but I'm going to give Jackie Tyler, you know, mother award.
She's my favorite mother.
Cause Sylvia, honestly, Sylvia Noble, I didn't really like until Donna's story was actually over when the doctor is saying, you know, for one moment, she was the most special woman in all the universe. And she goes, well, she already was. She's my daughter. You know, like, well, then tell her. It's like the doctor needed to tell her, you're belittling your daughter. If you love her, show her. And then after that, those brief little moments, I'm like, okay, I like you now, Sylvia. But yeah. Jackie, I think I liked from the beginning.
And now I will have to rewatch all the episodes for the mothers. It's all your fault. Go away. Feel guilty.
Mother's Day rewatch.
Basically, yeah.
A Mother's Day rewatch. I also like that Jackie loves Mickey, too. Even though she knows that Rose and Mickey aren't together. She still
Jackie's
loves
a very compassionate lady, but she's not going to put up with any BS.
No.
She's going to call the spade a spade. She's, you know, hey, you know what? You screwed up. Just own up to it. So she's holding people accountable in their lives, which I really liked about her.
If it wasn't for her bringing the tea on board, too, that spilled and, you know, woke up the, helped David Tennant because his own doctor. See, a good English mother knows. You got to have a cup of tea. A cuppa. Okay, so we've done Rose. We've touched on all the moms. I think we need to go back to the companions here a little
bit.
Let's
do it. So we're on to Martha?
If you want to, sure.
Martha was a rebound companion.
One of our friends manages a theater, and sometimes he's able to get clearance to show the premiere episode of Doctor Who in the theater. Now, it's hard because that's a Saturday night here, and that's prime theater time, so he really has to fight for it. So we went to go see it one time, and, you know, all of us Whovians are out there waiting to go in, and I heard some women talking. And they mentioned, yeah, well, you know, except for Martha, because nobody likes Martha. She's awful. She's the worst companion. Why did they write her? And I'm like,
no, they didn't.
Martha gets no love.
Poor Martha. She just didn't have a chance.
No.
Although they did write her in sort of a whiny way. For somebody who's a doctor, to be so whiny, I just thought that was incongruous.
I feel like Martha was never given a proper chance. Not only from the writers and from the fans, but also from the doctor. He never actually gave her a proper chance to show him that, no, she's not Rose, but she's just as capable, just as amazing, and just as worth of his friendship. And from the very beginning, basically, the only chance that Martha got to shine was the year that wasn't, where she did all the heavy lifting. But all the time before that, she was just there because, at least that was my feeling, because the doctor didn't want to be lonely, didn't want to be alone. And the way they were introduced, basically, Doctor to Martha and Martha to Doctor, especially that very first episode with Martha, with the hospital. It left something of a bad taste in my mouth. Because the doctor that I've seen in that episode was inconsiderate, was a little bit crazy, which I could understand. But the way he went on about getting Martha to travel with him at the end of the episode felt wrong to me. And not wrong because, oh my god, they are replacing Rose. It felt wrong because I felt like Martha didn't deserve the way what she got, basically, in that episode. And if it was up to me, the doctor would be making up for that particular introduction for a very long time.
Something I think you need to remember, though, on that, is that he didn't go from Rose to Martha. This is when we had the Christmas episodes, and the first Christmas episode was when we basically got introduced to Tennant. We had between Rose, I mean, as soon as she says, "Well, but I love you," and he's like, "Quite right, and if this is the last time we'll ever speak," and then he doesn't get to say, "I love you," he doesn't go straight from that to Martha. He goes straight from that to Donna Noble Bride in his TARDIS on the Runaway Bride. And at the end of that, if I remember correctly, he basically kind of wants her to come along again on the ride. You know, we've now had this adventure, and she said that she just didn't want to go. And he goes from that to Martha. So he's already been, he's lost Rose, and he's been turned down now by Donna.
I forgot about
and
that.
And is going on.
I remember the episode, but I didn't remember that it came before Martha.
So it's that I find kind of interesting, because he's been rejected and he's lost. And now we have Martha, who they kiss because he needed, you know, to do, I think it was the DNA, whatever kind of thing, you know, to kind of hide himself from the Jadoon. Wasn't that with them?
Yeah, come on. That is not a reason.
I know, but it's like, but he, you know, he's, I think he's been hurt. I know.
You're it doesn't justify up. That. Come on. Just because your life sucks doesn't justify you being a dick. And kissing somebody without them letting you, or, you know, asking them if you're allowed to. Come on, Heather. I do not believe you just said that.
You have to be a pretty close friend to do that.
I'm not justifying. I'm just saying that's where his head was. And, you know, if suddenly this swashbuckling doctory guy suddenly grabs me in my hospital that is now on the moon and a few moments before was down on Earth, he grabs me and kisses me, I might get a little too.
True that. Yeah.
My, where has the time gone? I think we're going to leave it there for right now. We'll come back next week instead of our usual 2 weeks. We're going to come back next week and we'll finish up the women of Doctor Who, the Russell T. Davis years, finishing Martha, and of course getting to Miss Donna Noble. Thank you so much to Cammy and Alex for joining me this time. Next time, we'll also be joined by Maya, so it's always fun to have another chick around. Do make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Double Twist, and OneCast, or the podcast platform of your choice. Just look for Sci-Fi for Chicks. You can also search for Sci-Fi for Me Radio, so you can catch all the programs from scififorme.com. We'd also love to hear your comments on the ladies that we've already talked about, Rose, a little bit of Martha, the mothers. You can do that by emailing us, scififorchicks@scififorme.com. You can, of course, call the hotline, 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-5. And of course, go over to Twitter and follow us at Sci-Fi for Chicks. You also want to check out scififorme.com, all of our recaps, reviews, and news, and the different shows we have there. You can find scififorme.com on Facebook and Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram. We will see you next week to finish up the women of Doctor Who, the Russell T. Davis years. Thanks. Bye-bye. On our next episode, the ladies talk the women of Doctor Who, the Russell T. Davis years. I do not like the Martha hate that's out there just because, yeah, she fell for him.
In fact, she met guys who fell in love with her.
I don't understand a doctor becoming romantically involved with a companion, because to me, they're not supposed to.
I was sitting there watching the episode and I was like, oh my God, she's going to do it. She can't, but she's going to do it. And I was so into it and I was so emotional and she got me there.
What I think I love is that she really doesn't think much of herself, but she does. But if you say that to her, she's going to come back and fight.
When I first met her as a character on the show, I wasn't sure whether I would like her or not. She grew on me very quickly.
That's next time on Sci-Fi for Chicks, Women of Genre.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.